Welcome to Movie Richard's Movie Month, where the Atlantic Voice Network's very own in-house critic, Movie Richard, looks at what's out and about to be out at your local multiplex. I'm Zeph, and here now, the man at the concession stand, Movie Richard.
It's Richard's Movie Month, but it's technically February. We didn't do a show in January because we were busy. Let's just say we were predisposed. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. A lot's been going on, but like you said, been a little busy, but I'm feeling good and I'm ready to talk about some movies tonight.
Yeah? Well, we are going to talk. You and I went back and forth in planning, and we're going to talk about Star Wars, and we're going to talk about Bright, and I guess we'll start with Star Wars. And before we have our conversation, one of the reasons I'm excited about this conversation, we touched on it on the last show. You and I had a discussion about how Star Wars meant different things to different generations.
Yes, sir.
And obviously, without giving up too much, I'm of indeterminate middle age, and Richard, our star, has all of his middle age still to come. So,
yes, sir.
So let me ask you my first question. Did you like Last Jedi?
Liked it, yes. But for our listeners who were fortunate enough to be with us in the last show, I was very excited to see it because my expectations were that this was going to be, you know, kind of one of the big films for me of last year, 2017, closing out the year, because all 2018 is all Marvel and comic book movies, big releases. And I liked it, but it did not meet expectations for me.
Really?
Yeah.
So why not?
A lot of different reasons. All of the cast that I really enjoyed returned. Mark Hamill, Bodega, I always pronounce his wrong name correctly.
Yeah. From South London.
Yeah. Enjoy him. I enjoy Miss Ridley. I enjoyed the cast, but it just was not as wow and amazing. Even the storyline was not as grandiose as I would have liked for it to have been. You know, you wait 2 years for a film, and I'm wanting to be a little bit more wowed by a Star Wars film. It didn't do it for me.
It's funny you say that, because I'm going to be upfront here. Mm-hmm. And again, this isn't about what I think this show is about. Richard's thoughts. I didn't like it at all. Mm. Didn't like it at all. And I just think it's a bad movie in that it's badly constructed and poorly edited and very poorly written. But beyond all of that, in terms of what you've just said, the story did, on reflection, it seems kind of underwhelming.
Very underwhelming.
I mean, I know we're going to go there as we start breaking this thing down. You know, I felt the Luke Skywalker stuff was handled poorly, but for long stretches, and again, part of this with Star Wars is I think they've introduced some very interesting characters. But the problem when you introduce all these characters is as you continue, you've got to give them something to do.
At some point.
Yeah, and I felt like the three or four characters, Poe, Oscar Isaac's character, John Boyega's character, and even Princess Leia herself seemed to get caught on this. Yeah, we're all on a spaceship and we're being chased, and it just sort of there. And
there's just a lot of, for me, speaking to your point, and I feel bad for using the phrase underwhelming because I use it so much when we were discussing Blade Runner on a previous episode. But this, to me, was by far, in the last few years, going to see a big budget film with a lot of history and tradition behind it. This was by far the most I'd been underwhelmed probably since Spider-Man 3, which was, 7 years ago.
Did you feel that it is because of that history that it's underwhelming? Do you think Star Wars, because we are going to get into this discussion about generations and passage of time and what is now an old franchise, it's an old franchise, like James Bond is an old franchise. Mm-hmm. Do you think it couldn't live up to the franchise's own sort of history and expectation? Or?
Well, it's difficult to say because everyone else outside of myself and you who saw it, myself, you and my father, everybody else, really was blown away by what they saw. All of my friends that I've spoken to, guy, girl, regardless of demographic, whatever, they love it. It's like, oh man, this is the best film of 2017. And to a lot of them with ranging ages, I've heard guys in their mid-30s say they thought that was the best Star Wars film, which I was like, quite the opposite for me when myself and my father, who I waited to see it until I went home for winter break. It was funny. We got in the car and it was one of those situations where we enjoyed it, kind of. But it's like we didn't want to accept that it was not what we were expecting. We looked at each other and we knew in that moment it was not an elite film or elite Star Wars film. I would even make the argument for me, not even like an elite sci-fi film. And all of the other reactions were, wow, wow. We were kind of like, do we really want to say it's bad? We were trying to find other words than bad to describe it. My father would say, who's seen every film 30 times, he was kind of, it was okay. Yeah. Well,
what is it that people anecdotally said to you that they liked about it? Because I know there's a lot of, it's great. And then people don't actually, they don't put into words what great to them
means. Honestly, I think that, and for all of my close friends, some of which you listen to this, and I say this with the most respect in the world, I think that they
don't know what they're talking about.
I would hate to say that. I want to say that. That's what they hear when I say this in a far more polite way. I would just say that I think they fell in love more with the experience of Star Wars coming out again. It's December. I'm excited for the experience. Seeing it in IMAX, seeing it in 3D, we're seeing it with people you care about, because this isn't a film you're taking random friend to see. You're taking the girlfriend or the boyfriend or the husband, the wife, the best, you know. And I think that they all fell so much into the experience that they weren't really honestly being objective and taking the emotion out of it. Because, and I was critical of the Rogue One film. But to me, the Rogue One film was better than this one. And I went into the end of the last episode, I said, there was no way that I could see that happening, because I thought that Rogue One was okay. But I would watch Rogue One again now before I would watch this one.
I'd like to watch Rogue One again. I enjoyed that a lot. I think for me, I enjoyed it because it was from Star Wars, but it was not of Star Wars, I guess is a clever, wordy way of trying to say it. In that, there's familiar stuff, but it wasn't bogged down by characters that for me personally, I'm sort of done with. To your point, I felt the way that your contemporaries felt when I went to see Force Awakens, that it was as much this experience. And at the time, I remember I enjoyed Force Awakens, but I was not blind to what I thought its faults were. My reaction when I went to Last Jedi was, I was not so hyped up in that sort of, hey, I'm having my Star Wars experience. Because we had Rogue One last year. So I'm like, that stuff isn't important to me. I was much more narrow-minded about, is this going to be a story that's interesting and that takes me somewhere? Mm-hmm. The greatest thing I can say about Last Jedi is I think it makes Force Awakens is a much better film now because of the Jedi movie.
I agree.
I really didn't enjoy it at all. Now, I went on a weekday, sort of after the big rush of people.
Same here.
You know, the kids are back in school, and I bailed out on a weekday, and there were only like six other people in the cinema.
Same here.
Did you see the film in a packed movie theater of like, you know, other it was people in that area? I mean,
we were in,
because I do want to get to this question about the experience of it, which is what you've said is something that your contemporaries,
which is a big part of it for me as well too. But it's definitely, like you said, my friends and the people who I really respect with their opinion of anything, we all love a good experience. It's like going to a baseball game. Are you really going for the game, or are you going for the social atmosphere that the audience can provide on top of the game? Teach their own. We went, I fought the urge to go see it before I went home. I saw it maybe a day or the weekend of, or maybe that Monday. It was pretty close, within 72 hours. Matinee, my father is 75, so we were not going to be going after about 11 to 12. And
plus, he gets the discount.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Oh, they let him in out there. Out there, it's like, I think we've seen you before. But so the situation's a little bit different. It's a 45-minute drive in North Carolina. So we're talking about it the whole time, like how excited we are. And it was, you know, half full. A lot of, once again, older people. Indian Trail, North Carolina. Shout out to Indian Trail. Nice theater. Comfortable. Here it would have been $120 for both of us. We have our snacks.
Okay.
He has his popcorn. I have my Coca-Cola Icy. I'm kind of getting back in that. I'm amped up to get in there. I have, like we just discussed in my head, I have The Force Awakens number one. I have Rogue One as a distant second. So for me, I'm going into it thinking, Last Jedi, bare minimum, will be the second best Star Wars film I've seen in the last 3 years. And when we left, it was the first time where myself and my father, who loved film, looked at each other and did not want to admit we were both underwhelmed. I'm using that word enjoyed very generously.
It's a long film, isn't it?
It's long. And you know what?
It felt every minute of it to me.
That's what I was also going to say. What stuck out to me more than anything that happened in the film that I'm sure we're going to cover, I looked at my watch a few times. And I just remember thinking, like, I've not done that in a while with a film where, especially of that magnitude,
yeah,
where after an hour, I'm like, let's get something going. I'm a big Adam Driver fan. Kylo Ren, the guy who played Kylo Ren. I love his acting. I've only known him for about a year or two. He was on the hit show by Lena Dunham, Girls. He played with Allison Williams, who also was in Get Out. But I did not like the Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver connection between their characters after about the first 4 or 5 times they were speaking to each other from other parts of the film galaxy. I didn't enjoy that. I also, and this kind of contradicts what we spoke about in our last episode, when we're speaking about one of our previous episodes, we're speaking about Get Out and diversity. For some reason, and I've seen people write this in reviews after I saw the film, so it wasn't like a preconceived thing. It felt to me, as a minority, for whatever reason, that Disney clearly made the decision that they were going to have a diverse cast. Now,
does seem a bit cookie cutter, doesn't it?
It felt very Disney. And that was the first time with the Star Wars film of the three where I was like, okay, yeah, this is Disney Star Wars. Every single character. Now, you have a diverse universe anyway because they're aliens and robots and guys dressed like robots. You know, you have Jedis and all these different things.
I'm with you. And now, as someone older, I can have the excuse of, of age undercutting my sense of political correctness. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a girl, we've got the black guy, mm-hmm. we introduced the Asian girl, mm-hmm. we have, you know, we had the Hispanic guy mm-hmm. with the, Benicio del Toro mm-hmm. in there. So, yeah, we're hitting all of the things here.
And I get it, but it felt forced to me.
It does, doesn't it, with so much of Disney.
And it just felt to me like, and without diving too much into that so we can get back into the review, but it just, for some reason, it just stuck out and it should be celebrated because I understand where Hollywood is from a political standpoint. But I think people like myself or you or my father, whoever, I can appreciate diversity when it doesn't feel forced in a film. But that's their choice and the numbers don't lie. I understand that it was extremely successful. Speaking about the storyline, which I agree with you.
So again, to pull it back to track there, and I'm going to agree with you and help you sort of cue up your next thought. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you think about the things you don't like about the film. Maybe the thing that bothered me the most was the way that they decided to create the relationship between Kylo Ren and Daisy Ridley's character. And in a strange way, it hurts both characters.
I agree.
Whereas in any great, and I, you know, this is unfair to suddenly pull this comparison out, but obviously what makes a film like The Dark Knight, which we talk about all the time, so strong is the fact that it is the second film in a series that has reestablished its hero in terms of Batman very strongly. And then it decides that the best way to keep that moving forward is to have an unbelievably compelling villain in The Dark Knight. So your lead characters, there is some balance to them. I felt the balance that was being created in the first movie by introducing Daisy's character and introducing Adam Driver, who has a very difficult job.
Absolutely.
That's a tough job, knowing that you have to be the lead villain mm-hmm. where the series already has this archetypal villain in Darth Vader that's always going to loom over it.
And that's the conflict.
And that's already difficult. You've already put that actor/character in a difficult enough position. But then by having this subplot play where they're talking to each other and are they connected and out of whatever, I think at that moment, I think that was the moment when I really started going, that was going on here.
Yeah, and Daisy Ridley's character is Rey.
And I'm not having a go at the actors here. I'm not. I'm talking about their characters.
Yeah, the connection between Daisy Ridley's character Rey and Adam Driver's character Kylo Ren, which, to your point, the issue that he's supposed to be facing in the film's plot itself is what you just said, following the path of Darth Vader and being Snoke's apprentice. And,
that's really clever on, and it's interesting, because that's really clever on the writer's part, because you also know that we all sit there in the audience, and we are going to get to this part of the conversation later about how different generations look at Star Wars. If you're of my age, Star Wars is all about, there's been six movies where Darth Vader's been the villain,
absolutely,
and then this is the backstory to him being the villain. So in a strange way, because you don't have him, and you need to create a new villain, it's kind of clever. It's like hiding in plain sight.
I like
that. He's got an issue because he's not Darth Vader. That's great.
And that's what they sold me on. I watched the trailers, and my understanding of all of the things leading up to the film was the conflict is what we just named, plus she's facing Rey, Daisy Ridley's character, Rey, is facing a conflict of her own of which side to be on and where does she fall. And I understand in the film that all of the communication that they had that was telepathic or face-to-face was to speak to that point of the stress that they're both going through and how they find solace in one another. But for whatever reason, I personally, if I'm producing it, and that is my angle, I would not have gone to the speaking to each other telepathically as often as they did.
That's moronic, isn't it?
I would have given it, in a two-hour film, I would have done it
once,
no more than three times in the course of the whole film. And it wouldn't have been what it felt like, which was every 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like that part of the plot at all. I think I'm being far more, I'm much harsher. I start with less generosity towards it than you do. Mm-hmm. I'd rather they didn't have that at all. Mm-hmm. And then I think
I wouldn't have minded that, honestly.
And I think when they are finally together there in that very exciting scene, because ultimately these are cartoon / action movies. The very exciting scene in the, I think they call it, you know, where they fight all the dudes. Yeah. I'm like, that would have been even more compelling. Did you feel, and I think now, because we've had this conversation about comic book movies and the spectacle of comic movies, and we've thrown in, you know, we've talked about CGI and all this type of thing. Did the film, how did you rate the film in terms of that very visceral,
The visuals, the
excitement, the set pieces. So away from the characterization, and because maybe before I let you answer, let me say this to you. I love the opening sequence.
I agree.
Very exciting.
I agree.
And I remember watching it, and I'm like, after 10 or 12 minutes, I'm like, I'm all the way in here. And then, like my own favorite James Bond movies, too often the start of the film is the best part. Mm-hmm. I felt all that sort of momentum and energy just slowly drained away.
I agree. I think visually, and I keep kind of comparing it to Blade Runner because the result was being underwhelmed, and we kind of spoke about that in a previous podcast. But I enjoyed what it looked like. I'm a very extremely visual. I did enjoy the scenery. I enjoyed the sound. I enjoyed where she was training Daisy Ridley's character Rey was training with Mr. Hamill. I enjoy that island and Luke Skywalker. I didn't like some of the little frog things they had. It seemed a little corny for me. And once again, I would have gone to that once. I didn't think they had to keep bringing these little things up. Because
Disney, though, isn't it?
Exactly. For me, my corny meter, which is just like, oh, come on, that's kind of lame, guys, was skyrocketing throughout the film. Like, I kept having these moments where I'm like, they're speaking to each other again. Okay, there are these frog things again. Like, how can I stay focused on what's going on? And they were not able, for me, to pull off what Thor did, which you have all this weird stuff going on, and you have a lot of different storylines, but it all fit. To me, Star Wars was the opposite. You have these things that you're either going to like or love, these plot points. And for me, they just missed on a lot of my... I didn't like when she's training, and it's like, it's been like an hour. I'm already getting a little like, okay, where are we going with this? And she like throws a rock, and it like destroys a building, and these frog things that are coming up. And now it's like 30 of them this time. I was like, I didn't need to see that. Like, it's not funny to me anymore. And her conflict with Luke Skywalker and the the big reveal of him knowing Kylo Ren's character in the beginning. And for whatever reason, it didn't hit me like I think it would have landed had they cut out a few of these unnecessarily lame, or I guess they were supposed to be comic relief parts. If they cut those out, I think it lands for me.
There is the, I mean, yeah, I really agree with you there. You really brought up something interesting in that there are the sort of the bones of something quite compelling, but unfortunately keeps getting in its own way. And then you sit there, and because you're right, there's been so much of the other sort of stuff that I think there was a great phrase used on a James Bond film, on a James Bond website about James Bond films, the CAC, which is what you call this stuff that just sort of ends up sort of in the way that you think you're supposed to want, but you actually don't. And you talk about all these different sort of accessory characters. It sort of muffles its own punches, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, and I mean, you hit it on the head there. Where are we going with this?
And, you know, and I'm glad you brought
up, because that was my thought. When I'm walking up, where are we going with it? What's the point here now?
I'm glad you brought up, because we're comparing this for our listeners. We're comparing this to other big time major motion picture historically franchises. Relevant franchises.
Which is what it is.
Which
and
is
I
what
think
it
Star
is.
Wars
Star
people kind of don't want to admit that.
It is.
But it is. Star Wars is no
James
different than
Bond,
James Bond.
Marvel.
It's no different than Marvel.
Yeah.
It's now on
Harry Potter at one point.
It's like its ninth movie. It's a franchise.
But what I was going to say about...
And Star Wars fans won't have that.
Oh, yeah. They
won't, because they feel like it's somehow demeaning to go, well, we're in a franchise. I'm a James Bond fan. We're about 24 of these things. It's a franchise, man.
It's a franchise. Fast and Furious is a franchise.
Right. They're franchises.
They're diehard Fast and Furious people who try to act like it's not. But to your point about James Bond, even a cartoonish Fast and Furious, but specifically James Bond in comparison to Star Wars, these same things that James Bond may do, which would allow its film, a James Bond film, to get in its own way, it doesn't land negatively for me, because the atmosphere that the characters are living in is very realistic. You're an agent. You're going somewhere. You're hiding your identity. It's James Bond. It's not like he's going to be on a spaceship with a lightsaber in this vast world of... It's like you're an agent. So if something lame, quote unquote, happens in a James Bond film, I just go, well, that's poorly done. But it is within the limits or the realm of that environment. And I would have done it this way or that way, but it's realistic.
Because you are clicked back to the realistic.
You're like, yeah, he's not going to pull out a lightsaber. So,
whereas in Star Wars, they don't have that luxury. If you're creating fantasy within a fantasy, then it's fantasy. There's nothing to go back to.
When they take these big swings, if they miss, it lands differently because of the world that these characters are living in. You got a billionaire here and a witch here. James Bond, you have an agent here, probably going to have an agent on the other side, probably going to have a very smart villain. So when he misses, you go, okay, well, maybe he should have shot that guy earlier. Or maybe the villain was underwhelming. But the reality is these villains that he's facing in that franchise, a little bit more realistic. As for Star Wars, they're swinging so hard that when they miss a lot of different points in one swing. So it's like my sensories were off, because I'm laughing when I don't feel like I should laugh. I'm focused during the comic relief. And after a while, I'm trying to catch myself and go, oh, I should be paying attention here. And this is serious. And this is funny. And after a while, I'm like, hold on. Why am I doing this in the audience?
Yeah, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
You started to lose track of what you were supposed to be holding on to and what was. I mean, to your point, so one of the actors in I love Oscar Isaac, and so he plays, he's Poe,
yeah,
not
po,
Finn,
po,
he's Poe.
Po, he's
Poe. So I like that character. He's clearly the sort of swashbuckler, sort of Han Solo-ish type replacement.
Foolhardy,
brave. He's, like I said, the first actor, the first 50 minutes of the film hangs around his character and his decisions and how he does things. And then by the time you're into the second hour and he's behaving that way, he's become a caricature of himself.
Yeah.
Like, really? Is he that dumb? And it's like, wow, what are you doing with this? Then you're right. You start losing as well. Am I supposed to be rooting for him? Or is he kind of a moron? Or because, you know, you've had him act like a moron for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
You're right. You sort of begin to lose your sense of where you are. This thing.
I didn't appreciate that. And what he reminded me of, because I'm with you 100%. I'm like coming into this film, like, really enjoying how he's portraying this character. Like we said, adventurous leader, reckless leader, flying, kind of feels like it would be Top Gun-ish because he's always in it. But what I didn't like is what you just said. It's like in Friday Night Lights with the quarterback. After he makes a certain amount of interceptions, he has the moment where he goes, oh, I understand, and I'm no longer the stupid quarterback. I get why I have to be mature and lead this team, even if it is for a moment before he goes back into becoming the foolhardy, reckless high school quarterback. With his character,
it's like a sitcom character.
There was no point of seriousness.
Oh, yeah, here he comes through the door, the guy that falls over.
There he is again. You have to have that moment of maturity, for me at least, to then when you return back to being adventurous, you go, okay, but he saw something and he developed, and there's a little bit of character development there. And another thing in the storyline that I really did not appreciate, Snook's character, who was played by Andy Serkis. Not extremely familiar with who he is.
He does all the stop action stuff, whatever they call it. Like, he plays all the apes in Planet of the Apes. It's that guy. It's the same guy.
He's
Golem and, like...
He's everything.
He's everything. Right, he is, when you see a fully CGI'd character, that's
pretty much him.
He's brilliant. I mean...
I just didn't... I've spoken to you about this...
That dude's dead. Oh, okay. Wow.
I didn't like it. You cannot, with me, as a person who's into the hero versus the bad guy, and I'm always rooting for the bad guy, you cannot build up a character like this. And I'm in my 20s, so I'm coming from the anime video game generation where bosses are always overpowered and it might take you 3 games to defeat one guy. You can't sell me on 2 films of this guy being unbeatable. And spoiler alert,
they kill him like that.
Well, and I did not like it.
This is the interesting thing about the film. For example, I'm like, okay, so they've killed him like that. But in the meantime, they've killed him. And we've also spent the last 25 minutes until they've killed him humanizing the villain. So at that moment, I was just funny like, so there are no villains left in the movie now. So we've now just got some soap
opera.
What
happens now with the hour, 30 minutes to go?
And then because they were busy, they'd been busy sort of trying to draw out this conflict in Kylo Ren, and really he's like Rey, and maybe they're not all bad.
Or they're going
to
join teams.
When he tried to become bad again at the end of the movie, well, I just didn't buy it. I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Very lame. And you know what? And to your point again, because I agree with you on that, once again, 100%. When you look at how they handled, let's say, that 7 to 10 minute scene, where in this scene, Kylo Ren and Rey are together. They're in the same, for lack of better words, room as Snook with his red guards who never been seen in Star Wars before. So you're aware that they're elite. And he's killed by a sleight of hand lightsaber of Kylo Ren using the Force. And his death could have been handled a lot of different ways. But what took power away from the scene for me is that you are selling me on the idea that an ultimately powerful, the most powerful villain could not sense that Force from his protege.
Yeah.
And then he's killed like that. Then they have more issues with these red soldiers who have weapons that have never been seen in a Star Wars film before. They struggle with them. And then after that, it's like the conflict comes back where are they on the same team or not? So now Kylo Ren says, join me and we can do this together. And I just, for whatever reason.
Do what together? Do what together? You just killed the villain.
I thought you guys were. What team are you on, Kylo? What team are you on, Daisy Ridley? What team? And then I'm thinking also, why did you guys struggle more with his servants than the guy who's more powerful than Darth Vader?
I
can't figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, again, these type of films are based on the conflict between hero and villain. And you can get away with the hero not always being very heroic because we are predisposed, we're rooting for the hero. So when he shows faults, we're fine with it. You actually can't get away with your villain. Your villain can be funny. Your villain can be He can be many things, Jeff Goldblum. He has to always be villainous. Again, there are great films. I think back to one of the greatest things about the very first Die Hard movie with Bruce Willis is the villain is clearly a villain, but he's also very urbane and he's got some great lines and he's funny and he's not just a psycho. But you know he's the villain. The trouble with the Star Wars movie, the Star Wars films, now that Darth Vader is no longer there, because Darth Vader was the villain. And in a strange way, he is a caricature of a villain. He wears black, he breathes heavily, he's bad all the time.
Bad all the time, yeah.
But you know something?
It's clear.
It does provide like sort of an axis to the film. The Snoke's death, I tend to believe that he will be back in the next movie.
I hope so.
Well, at that moment, I'm like, well, you're bringing him back? Well, why are we bother bringing him back? Because I never got to know him when we killed him, and now you're bringing... I don't believe he's returning.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's get to what I thought was interesting when we talked about in the last show. And if you haven't listened to our last show, go back and listen to the last show where Richard talks about a couple of different things. We touched on Star Wars, and we talked about how it meant different things to different generations. Did you feel... the Luke Skywalker character, we've talked about how Kylo Ren was handled. We've talked about how a lot of the other people in the rebellion have been handled. How do you think they handled Luke Skywalker's character? Where do you see that? And again, you come at this now that...
Different generation. Honestly, and with all of what you just said, different generation, we discussed as well, seeing it at different times. After a while for me during this film, because of, once again, the last film, Force Awakens, the whole reveal at the end was Luke Skywalker. So I think my expectations of what he was going to be, who Luke Skywalker is almost like the Michael Jordan of this whole thing. For whatever reason, the first 30 minutes I was in it, I was like, okay, here's the iconic good guy, training the current big time going to be in the next few films, Daisy Ridley as Rey. But I'll be even more honest with you. I was a little rubbed the wrong way because at the same time as some of her trainings taking place, Carrie Fisher's character had been blown up in a spaceship and came to her senses in space and flew back to another spaceship, which for whatever reason just threw me off of like, hold on, I didn't know Jedis could even do any of these things. And so now I'm looking at Luke Skywalker like, because we are aware that Carrie Fisher's character more than likely will not be returning because she is past. Now I'm looking at Luke Skywalker's character like, what can he do? Because I was not aware that Princess Leia could do any of that.
Well, it's interesting because she obviously... I can't believe I'm saying
this. And I hated that scene.
I'm talking like a super dweeb now. I didn't know she was actually a Jedi.
I didn't either.
Although she was kind of related to the Jedi. And whether she is or not, she has spent 5 films...
being a human.
not behaving in a Jedi fashion.
Yeah.
Whereas Luke Skywalker, if you go back and watch all the old ones...
been a Jedi.
He discovers he's a Jedi. Yeah. And then at some moment, he behaves in Jedi-type fashion. All of a sudden, she's like, oh, and she's a Jedi, too. It's a bit like being in Batman, where it's like, oh, wow, and Alfred has his own car. Oh, well, I didn't know that. I thought he was just the butler.
For me, it was very quickly. It would be like in the Fast and Furious film, some of these guys who were not great drivers in the beginning are immediately great drivers later in the franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
For the anime fans, it's Gohan going Super Saiyan. For the fighting fans, it's... all of the trash talkers who have come after Conor McGregor who were nice guys beforehand. For the boxing fans, it's all the guys now who want to be undefeated and keep that zero before Floyd. These are the same guys who never care. It's that thing where you go, hold on, nothing, like you just said, nothing that I've known of you in our relationship, viewer, audience, to fighter, athlete, or actress, I'd never seen any of this. Our relationship, I had thought that you were this. And it just, that scene, I wasn't like, ew. I was just kind of in a...
oh, come on now.
That was a little ridiculous. Like, me and my dad...
no, I was like, to quote you, where are we going here? Where are we going
where are we
with
doing?
This?
My dad,
what are we
who's,
doing here?
My dad, who's one of the most stoic moviegoers ever, when he wants to see something, he tapped my leg, which to me is like, in 27 years of watching films with him has happened once.
That's the eye roll, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's like, okay, that was a little ridiculous. And see, so it took away from the, to get back to your main question, it took away a little bit from the Luke Skywalker character as a whole.
I fully get that this set of movies, the last one did it really, really well. Because, again, Disney had spent a lot of money. They really didn't know. No, I think at the time, and with hindsight, you could have gone, you really needed to have messed up to have not got it right last time.
I agree.
I think in a strange way, the bar was unbelievably low. But you know something? Disney, to be fair, were like, okay, we need to bring some of the old guys back together. So if nothing else, you know, we've got some structure for the movie to move forward. And then depending how it does, we'll be able to introduce all the new guys and get rid of the old guys.
Yeah.
So I'm fair enough. I get that. I'm not one of those people sitting around going, I don't see this as a movie about the old guys. I see the old guys as helping bridge the new set of movies. That being said, to your point, Han Solo was used very well in the last movie.
They
kill him off, but they sort of demonstrate that his character has had consequences in terms of Kylo Ren and his marriage to Princess Leia. And he is an older guy with an understanding of he's got history. I felt that Luke Skywalker, who correctly you've said, at the end of the last movie, we've left it going, and here is Luke Skywalker, and you know, big drum roll, and we're all ready to roll. On a very base level, we start the movie with Luke Skywalker, and then we're more than happy to leave and head off somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but we just spent the whole last movie getting to Luke Skywalker. I felt that everything about how they handled Luke Skywalker was a massively missed opportunity. And what I mean by that is, clearly, this is a guy who is conflicted by his own history. In the same way that Han Solo was like, I know, but this is our son.
Mm-hmm.
It adds some sort of freight to it all. Luke Skywalker was a guy who's like, I'm done with this. This Jedi stuff is BS. I'm done with it. And yet, somehow, we don't really explore that. Then we just remove the character off screen and he's just forgotten. And then he arrives at the end where even his superheroic act, it doesn't really mean enough because we didn't really feel his pain. Yeah. We just got rid of him.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and then he just, like you just said,
I thought Mark Hamill was great.
He threw away
the lightsaber. He had some great lines and you're going, I would have loved 10 more minutes of him and Daisy Ridley arguing on the island and him going, forget all this. It's nonsense. But then they just shuffled him off.
In the section that I
like. And then he comes back at the end.
I would say this with this is a part where we talk about usually what we would have done differently. Looking at the two films now, because we have a greater context with the Force Awakens and Last Jedi, if they were going to have him die in the way that he did, and if he was going to be handled, his exit as a whole was going to be handled the way that it is, which is he's training and then he's going to face a conflict. The reveal is going to come. And then at the end, he's going to do something heroic and lose. If that was the case, now looking at both films, what I would have done in the last film a little bit earlier and begin this film with her just getting there and give me 20 minutes of him going through the conflict of something that would speak to the significance of her being trained.
Yeah.
Tell me on something on that. You know,
if you're going to bring the old characters in, then you have to do, this isn't some walk-on.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just roll them out there. Mm-hmm. Because many of us, if you're of my generation, we've actually invested in these characters. Mm-hmm. So don't treat them poorly.
Mm-hmm. My father especially.
You treat the character poorly, and therefore you do treat a whole generation of fans poorly in the, this is what you've done with this guy. Why are you bothering? Again, what are we doing here? Let's not have him in it at all.
Yeah, I hope that they don't even mention these characters going forward.
No, because they don't. Not because. And I don't say that because I don't believe we don't need to move on from these characters. I think we do. But because, you know something? You're making a hash of it. Mm-hmm. You're ruining how we feel about the fight. I mean, again, I look at Princess Leia. And I remember when I first saw Star Wars. Princess Leia was, and again, this is now many years ago. We're looking 3 or 4 decades ago. Princess Leia was this sort of classic 1970s, very cool, wow, she's a ball buster and mm-hmm. she's tough and she's brave. It's like when you watch the original Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend is not just a damsel in distress. Mm-hmm. She's got attitude. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a groundbreaking mm-hmm. character. Now, fast forward 40 years, the Princess Leia on screen, she just seems like this benevolent old lady who's kind to everyone. She's not funny. She's not edgy.
Can fly,
she's not anything. Mm-hmm. She's like a different person. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, why? All right, so exit question. Because I want to get the bright. Mm-hmm. With what you've said, what are we doing here? Where is this franchise going? And B, how emotionally invested are you now, having sat through Last Jedi, in terms of where it does go?
The first question, where is it going? They're in a very awkward space. And the reason I say that is because I'm in the minority of viewers. Myself and you and my father, we're in the minority of viewers who were not wowed by it. That movie made a lot of money with a very, for me and for you and for my dad, average to poor level of writing and execution. But they grossed a ton of money. The fans, I'm telling you, 99% were like blown away. Like, I've heard people say it was better than Avatar 1, debatable for another show. If I'm them, this is what I am doing. I'm kind of excited about what we were just able to accomplish, and I'm aware of all of the mistakes that I just made. And I make a great, well-written, action-packed film. And I do that because I'm going to sell the audience on this being a transitional film. If I add another great film behind it, a little bit more attention to detail, more character development, they can reel in you and I. And what they can do by doing that with a little less plot holes, those type of things.
Sure.
They can kind of sell it in a way how Lord of the Rings did before the last big battle. Well, that's a transitional film. We were getting the old guys out and just ushering in the new people. And yeah, we made some mistakes, but that's a transit. We're really getting into what this generation of Star Wars is going to be moving forward. Now, how emotionally invested in it am I? I'll be honest with you. I've kind of hit a wall because what I just said, it's a transitional film. That I hate that. That is why I stopped watching Harry Potter. That is why I regret watching a lot of The Lord of the Rings, because I was hoping that Star Wars would be the first franchise where there is no film that I feel like is completely a lead to a next film. I thought Star Wars, especially with Disney's funding, would never give me what I thought was a filler movie that was just executed very poorly.
It is, isn't it?
And for me, when you start giving me filler films,
it is filler film, isn't it?
I start to feel, because we're speaking about emotion, I begin to feel like Disney's in a place where they know they can just put out anything and that is what they're going to do. That's what my mind is telling me.
See, it's interesting. I'm with you there, and I'd never thought about it until you said it that way. I look back at Force Awakens. That's a, you know, you can call it a transition movie. Mm. It's a very successful transition movie. I still felt that this film, we've still not started. We're now two, fair or foul, we're two films into the third trilogy. And I still don't know where this trilogy's going. We should have set this up by now. The much maligned second trilogy with the Revenge of the Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace and all that, much maligned. Hey, you and I are into the first movie.
Yeah.
And again, while I know chronologically it happens before, you still have a transitional character in Ben Kenobi mm-hmm. that makes you, the audience, feel good that this is connected to the other three movies. Mm-hmm. You knew after 45 minutes where we're going with this mm-hmm. bad boy. And yeah, it took three movies to get there, but we knew where we're going. Mm-hmm. I don't know where we're going here. Because I don't want another movie of people deciding are they good or they're bad.
I can't.
And I don't have Luke Skywalker to hold my hound anymore.
Yeah, I can't. It's Star Wars for me is like the Paranormal Activities in horror, or the new, now Stephen King's back, his films, the Greek films like the 300s or the Marvel films. I'll go to see it. But I just think that they're, if they were, are to pull this off again, and I feel like it's another filler film, I could see myself not watching any more of them, because I don't want to waste another 2 hours watching a filler film. And I loved the first one, actually. That's where you and I have a difference of opinion. I enjoyed The Force Awakens. I was like, oh, this is my generation.
I did like it. I enjoyed it in a fast food type of way. Like, I'm not blind to what I believe it's for. Yeah. But I did enjoy it. Don't get me wrong.
I was able to overlook The Force, so I loved it that much. Rogue One now is now my second favorite.
And that's a really good movie that gets undersold.
Now, I have to agree with you. And I would make a very weak argument that, for me, I enjoyed the last 7 minutes of Rogue One, being completely honest, more than I enjoy this entire film.
That says something. I like Rogue One a lot. And I now, as we transition to our next subject, I'm gonna help you out here. I'll show as a segue of class and of style.
World-class guy here.
Yeah. You talked about the Harry Potter movies.
Yes.
And so I'm now setting up this notion of filler movies and transition movies and what we've been talking about. You can get away with it with Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings because they already have an existing story that most of your hardcore fans have read, and they know where it's going. So they are more forgiving about the fact that, hey, well, we didn't resolve anything in this movie because there's another two coming.
It's written. Yep.
James Bond, savvily enough, has never really gone down that road because it knows its audience now have an expectation that you're going to give me a complete movie that I can watch on its own. There's an old argument that James Bond fans, we all have, and we all know that ultimately every James Bond film, you can watch James Bond in any order, or you can watch him in order, and the fact that they're in order or not in order doesn't ruin them for you. You just go, oh, yeah, he referenced that in the other movie. Mm-hmm. That's one thing James Bond's done very well. You can start anywhere in that movie series. Star Wars seems intent on following this, we are telling a big, long story here. And I put that down to this current culture of streaming TV shows off the internet where, yes, House of Cards is 15 hours and you're going to go all the way through and this sort of thing. And I feel that's a mistake for Star Wars. Interestingly enough, talking of watching stuff streaming, let's be done with Star Wars and let's talk about Bright that came out in December. For those of you who don't know, Bright stars Will Smith and Joel Egerton. It was underwritten by Netflix and released on Netflix, but it was reviewed as a movie. It didn't appear in the cinema, am I correct?
Yes.
It was reviewed as a movie by the film critics who all put the boot into it. First of all, did you see Bright and what did you think of it?
I did. And also for those critics who did put the boot on it, I do want to be very clear. It is the most successful thing that Netflix has ever had and they ever produce exclusively. Unless something has changed in the last 3 weeks.
You mean successfully
and financially.
Really?
I think if I remember correctly, as far as exclusive content created by or purchased by Netflix that has been released exclusively, it is the most successful film, stand-up, or franchise that they've ever had. That's what I remember reading.
I've read that too. Yes,
viewers, please give it to me. But
did you like it? Is this a good movie? Did I miss something by not having Netflix?
Oh man, see those questions are difficult. Did you miss something by not seeing it? I wouldn't say you necessarily missed something by not seeing it. Is it a good film? What I would say is I thought it was much better than the reviews that it got.
It didn't it?
And you know what? This is another one, actually. Everyone that I know who has seen Bright was like, that movie was way better than I thought it was going to be. I've seen it twice now. I saw it once just because of Will Smith and it being on Netflix, and I was kind of proud of seeing an actor of that level come and be in an exclusive film. And then I watched it again a little bit more seriously, having read the reviews, paying a lot more attention to everything. And you know what? I walked away both times with the same feeling. I was like, you know what? I'll watch the sequel. They're making a sequel. They have to. I was like, you know, I did not think that was a bad film. Now, like I said, there are some people who are like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. No, but I would say it was a much better film than any critic who beat it up would say. I would definitely say it is extremely watchable. I think it is extremely entertaining for what it is. As loopy as that storyline kind of could be, I thought they handled it pretty well for what it is, which is the issue we just had with the previous film. You have Will Smith, who is an officer, and he's being paired with
Joel Egerton's character, Australian actor,
who is an alien. There's the easiest way to – a non-human officer. Okay. And what they're being faced with is Earth is kind of – we have non-humans living here. Right? I'll just call them aliens. It's
basically fairies. A remake of Alien Nation, the James Caan, Mandy Patinkin. Have you never seen it? So that's a movie that came out in 1988. Mm-hmm. And this is why when I saw the trailers for Bright, Alien Nation stars James Caan, who plays an L.A. Police Department officer. And Mandy Patinkin, who I think now is on that Criminal Minds TV show, and of course he was in Princess Bride, he plays an alien. Aliens, basically the setup of the story is aliens have arrived to Earth and they live with us. Hmm. But they're aliens, and because they're aliens, they're newcomers. It's basically sort of an analogy of, you know, they're like immigrants. So they have like all District the low-paying jobs. Hmm. So this guy, Mandy Patinkin, plays the first alien guy to join the LAPD, and he's paired up with James Caan, who hates aliens because they killed his human partner, and the two of them have to take down a conspiracy where some aliens are working with some businessmen to rip people off and make money. So that it's sort of this weird cross between like an alien movie and like Lethal Weapon, which was popular at the time. And so that's that movie. So Bright comes out, and we've got Will Smith as an LAPD uniform officer. Yes. And he's partnered up with this guy who is not an alien, but like an elf or something. It's the same thing, yeah, right?
It's similar. But I'll tell you what, because when you start saying words like, these are trigger words for me. Elf, witch, sure. Alien, yeah, cop. Yeah. You start going like, for me, I start going, okay, hold on. Who's on whose side here? But once again, I'll tell you, for what it was, which is almost exactly a remake of what you just said, how they're constructed. Will Smith, human, aliens are here, fairies are here and extremely wealthy, witches are here, wands are here.
People discriminate against them, people have prejudice.
But you know, for a lot of us, I could see myself going, and maybe if Will Smith's not in it, if someone says cops, fairies, there is a wand that is trying to be taken, and there's some type of social tone, I'd probably be like, yeah, pass. But I became very interested in, because the first question I had as the film kind of really got underway was, wow, what are fairies going to look like on a modern Netflix film? My second question is, what are the aliens really going to be like? I did like, just strictly visually, the aliens to me kind of had that District 9 kind of look to them. The CGI, I love it. Love District 9. Underrated film. But that the way that they look, the CGI, I'm sure there's some phrase with how they screen it or code it.
So you streamed it. What did you watch it on?
I watched it on Netflix.
But did you watch it on your TV? Did you watch
on my
it
on television? Okay. Well, I have a smart TV, but ironically, I plug my Xbox in and still watch Netflix on my Xbox.
Right, so you're watching it on pretty decent size screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And which is, to me, it was honestly kind of revolutionary for me. And I want to quickly touch on why, because I think you'll have some cool points.
No, because I do have
it.
A question for you about...
Oh, we can go ahead.
Well, let me ask you a question then before we get into that. If you dropped $25 to go to the cinema, to park, to get your popcorn, to get your drink, and watched Bright, you've been quite generous towards it. You've been far more generous towards it than most of the reviewers. Do you think if I'd taken that money out of your pocket and made it a purely cinema experience, would you be the same way? In the same way
probably
now,
not.
You just said, you know, I took my dad to Star Wars, you went all the way in.
Probably not. So
what I'm saying is, and I guess this is my lead-on question now, that's why I asked about, did you watch it on your computer? Did you watch it on TV? Do you think the fact that it's on Netflix changes I'm not talking about the critics, our bar for how we evaluate it?
I would definitely say
are we much more
that.
Forgiving of it?
Well, I think, but before we even dive so much into Netflix specifically, I think that, as we said on a previous show, watching a film, it could be the same film on a television versus in a theater, those are separate experiences.
Sure.
Very quickly. That's why I have some friends who hated Wonder Woman. They saw it only on television. I saw it in theater. I think if I had seen it on strictly television, I don't know if it lands the same. Dunkirk, close friend of mine, did not enjoy it on television. Somehow was able to see it very recently
on IMAX
and in IMAX, yeah, and was like, it feels like two completely different films.
That's interesting.
But to your point about the Netflix thing, I want to give a quick buildup of how it felt. So this was kind of for my dad and myself, our first time ever having a big release. It comes out, I forgot the specific day, but it's coming out. We know it's coming on a Friday, I believe, actually. But it's a big release, but we're going to watch it at home. So that was kind of a new experience. Hey, this film's coming out, talking about it all week, and we're not going out to see it. We're going to watch it at home. And when we watch movies at home, we have a very specific way that we do it. And I'm sure that if I had seen it for that $25 or $10 back home, I might look at it a little bit differently. But I want to make this point. I think that I would have paid, now I don't know how this is going to make sense, if I would have had to swipe my card at home still and pay the $25 to watch it at home.
Pay-per-view.
I would have felt the same. But if I go out and watch this film, like I'm leaving, I've driven the 45 minutes, I have all the stuff, I've taken time to come outside of my house to do it, I don't know if I would have liked it as much. And I've been trying to figure that out. I think that I'm at a point now where, because of Star Wars and because of Blade Runner and because of some of these films, I'm becoming a little bit skeptical of leaving and spending the money outside of the house when I can stay in, stop the film whenever I want to, literally leave and come back to it if I want to. If I'm distracted or lose my focus, I can just pause it. And if you purchase something on demand, you have 48 hours. I can start it all the way over. I really kind of enjoyed that with this film. And it makes me wonder now, how will streaming as a whole affect the movie experience going forward? Because I might would have liked Star Wars more if I could have just watched it on the couch.
There's a lot to be said for that. I mean, yeah, there's two schools of thought in there. A good movie is a good movie.
And
obviously, we're all of ages, because, you know, the subtext of these conversations is always about the fact that you and I are slightly different age.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have different sort of windows of when we see stuff in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I saw the original Star Wars in the cinema. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are, you know, a teenager now, if you were my age, if you're my age now as I was back then, that's just a movie you've seen on TNT with adverts, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That said, with what you've just said, though, are you concerned about yourself? Because I think everything you've just said about it is true. I do have a different inherent level. There are plenty of films I've seen on TV that I wished I'd seen that in the cinema. Wouldn't that have been great? So I'm talking about some real classics. Mm-hmm. But then there are plenty of other films where you go, you know, if someone says to you, oh, did you see so-and-so? Well, what do we used to say? Yeah, wait till it comes out on video.
Father figures.
Right. So there is this sort of, you know, we all have this sort of ranking system.
Mm-hmm.
But are you concerned for yourself? Is there a danger with Bright?
Yes.
Becoming a streaming movie that suddenly, does it undercut the movie experience in a way that perhaps it's not supposed to?
I think so. I do. I think that what happened to me in this experience was, wow, I don't have to go out to experience what I always went to the theater for. This was a test run for me. It's, here's a film that I've becoming excited for last second, and the big release is here in my house. And how I'm wondering the whole way, I wonder how that's going to land, watching a hyped film, plugging in my Xbox or my dad's Fire Stick, and we're watching it at home. And I think the negative thing that I got out of this, which could undercut the film experience for me going forward, and a lot of my friends who've been saying the same thing, I don't know that I feel the need to go out and see the films the same, because I can experience it to a certain extent in the comfort of my home now. When I'm having these big blockbuster films, like you said, you go by yourself, it's $30. You go with somebody, Lord knows, it just depends on the region.
Yep.
You're spending this money, and I think now more than ever, that money, I'm believing there has to be a correlation between what I spend and the experience in the cinema. And it's been a few misses. Star Wars, Blade Runner, back. And then the movie that should have been the miss, Bright, which was supposed to be, oh, so awful, so bad. Man, I watched that thing twice, once with my father and once again with some friends. And we were like, man, this is kind of cool. Maybe they should do this with everything going forward.
Well, you see, that's interesting now, because in Star Wars, there is a great moment in the movie, spoiler, that the rebels escape because the one spaceship goes into like super speed and it plows through mm-hmm. the other spaceship. Mm-hmm. And the filmmaker has made the decision. There is a massive explosion on screen. The whole movie theater is shaking and loud. Mm-hmm. And then he turns all the sound off for like 5 seconds. So the cinema, all you're seeing on the screen is colors mm-hmm. and stuff, but your cinema has gone from shaking to completely quiet. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, that was actually one of the, that was mm-hmm. a great
piece really
of
cool.
cool filmmaking. Mm-hmm. If Steven Spielberg had done that, we'd all be going, oh my gosh, Steven the Spielberg genius. Film ever. Oh, amazing. Yeah. I wish I thought of that. To your point now, that, okay, I can watch stuff at home and I don't have to go out anymore. Are moments like that moment in the Star Wars movie now suddenly undercut? Because yes. you can't replicate. You can't, and you said yourself, yeah. we just talked to, you've mentioned Dunkirk and you've mentioned Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. which are both sort of, in your face is the wrong word, but these are films that were made to be watched on massive screens with sound and whatever, and people have watched the same movie in two different environments and had two different experiences.
Completely different.
Mm-hmm. Is the fact that what you've said about Bright, that you know something, because it was so convenient, it was a better film than people give it credit for. Because it was so convenient, I was more generous to it because I knew I could walk away from it. Are you not also concerned, though, that at some level it hurts?
I think it does.
So while we're looking at something, do you think that having these first-run movies to stream, is this a good idea or not? Man, when we have plenty of binge-watching TV we can watch and we can have our equivalent of Star Wars and, yeah, this is just a transitional episode.
Yeah.
You can get away with all that.
Yeah.
I watched Ozark on Netflix because I like Jason
Bateman. Very popular.
Stan, good. I liked it. I thought it was good stuff. 9 episodes. Some top quality Hollywood people in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. Do you think, though, for the movie, mm-hmm. and I mean the movie where it's, that is that whole thing where you take your dad and the lights go out, and is the future with things like Bright? Is this going to hurt cinema?
I think streaming is going to affect, and I'm sure that it already has begun to some extent, because I see it happening with cable.
See, it doesn't hurt TV, because it is TV.
Yeah. We've seen what streaming has done to the music industry. I think at some level it has to affect the moviegoer and the cinema experience the same way because of what you just said. I think there are people who go, I don't really even like movies that much anyway. And they don't care about, like, my coworkers at work. Sure. They're like, I don't care how loud it is. I either want to see a movie or I don't. And where I watch it, eh. Now, for myself and you, it's like, we look at, well, I want to see this here because I know what the sound is here. And I know that it's been developed for a big screen. And I also know that this one has not. So the sound may be whatever it is. But, yeah, I think it will hurt the experience because I think what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of people who really fight that battle in their head. How much do I really care about putting on clothes, paying this money, and leaving my house? How much does that cinema experience really mean to me when I can watch this thing at home? I think there are going to be a lot of people in the next 5 to 10 years who go, I'll watch it at home. Who cares? Because the extra of the sound or the 3D glasses or the experience, for them, you lose a bit of that, but you gain it back with having your daughter or your son or your dog or the money you save or the ability to pause or I can eat whatever I want. I can order a pizza. I can have my wife bring me a pizza. I can bring her one. I think that what I hope happens because of the success of Bright, which was a bad film. This was a bad film that went to number 1 on Netflix and streaming. So I'm thinking they're going to make a better one, actually. What I'm hoping happens is it forces the cinema and the people who are producing films to be seen in a cinema. I hope it just forces them to make better films because they are going to have to fight for an audience more. I don't believe that's going to happen.
It's interesting. Before I came in your mouth, I'm sort of thinking, people need to up their game.
Yeah, I doubt that'll happen.
Well, sure. Unfortunately, I probably agree with you there. I know that for the listener, you're listening, they're going, well, you guys didn't like Star Wars, and that's true. Mm-hmm. I did feel like the Last Jedi movie was this weird sort of, hey, fans, we're going to give you all this sort of thing, and then people just got a bit sloppy. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a lot of poor decisions and sloppy decisions made in Star Wars that in a strange way, as someone who's not all the way in, well, I'm a bit insulted by that. And so you've taken my money and now I'm disappointed. And in a strange way, you know, a movie like Last Jedi is going to push someone like people like you and I towards things like Bright. Mm. And that's it's this weird sort of. And I get it. I do. I'm old fashioned enough. Yeah, I do want to see things on the big screen. But you're right. There is nothing worse than going and see. I mean, I walked out of Star Wars going, well, that was 200. That was 3 hours down the toilet or more.
For us,
and $25.
For us, it was $5.
Yeah, I mean, there you
drove
go.
An hour you drove there an hour. And 2 hours. Well, four. An hour there, an hour back, and 2 hours.
Because you're sitting there watching Bright going, yeah, you know, it's all right.
Yeah.
And if it was bad, you're going to go, yeah, I watched it, whatever.
Or you can just stop. Is. But you know, something else to both of our points in different ways. The common, based on what I define as the common moviegoer, just the person who just goes to see a movie because of hype or because of now they have a significant social media presence, unlike anything I've ever seen.
No, it's different now, isn't it?
Yeah, you go, you know, when a movie's coming out on Friday, you'll never have heard of it that Sunday. By that Wednesday, your Instagram or your Facebook or your Snapchat, an ad has been forced on you. But the common moviegoer, my coworkers, some of my friends back home who just go with us just because, they're not even thinking about sound. So for them, it's literally their quality of life is based on how comfortable they are. And for a lot of us, comfort is saving a few bucks and not having to go out every Friday. For me, it's the opposite. I like the experience.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to remember, like you and I have discussed quite a bit, I go to the movies the majority of the year. And I have not seen 4 or 6 of the like 8 Oscar nominated Best Picture films.
Yeah,
the common moviegoer isn't even watching the Oscars.
Yeah, but we're going to get to that.
And they're not even worried about sound. And when they go see Star Wars, there's some very simple things that they want. They're probably more excited to see it with their friends than they are anything that's going on with the film. And that's why when we ask these people, hey, well, what did you like? It's, I don't know.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a strange way, films like Star Wars actually do deliver because they've delivered on an experience for people.
Yeah.
Because you and I, perhaps, we're a bit more discerning.
Yeah, we're seeing the film.
We're seeing the film full stop.
Your friends are more excited, especially back home. They're more excited for the car ride and the
I'm not knocking that at all.
I'm not. Yeah. But I think that this Bright and its success, because a lot of people did not see it. A lot of young people, I was surprised, having 2-3 teams to speak to. A lot of young people did not see it. But I think that audience, the majority of the common moviegoer, I think they're siding with Netflix. Because I'm hearing my coworkers say stuff like, I haven't been to a movie in 8 months.
Yeah.
We got rid of cable, but we have Netflix and Hulu and an illegal Fire Stick.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the old thing about cord cutting. All right, so getting towards the end of the show, because we're still old-fashioned and we still believe in going to the movies. Anything else that you've seen that you just want to shout out or tell people to avoid?
I would avoid, and I feel very negative today.
This is a show where we've been kind of negative. So we'll keep the theme.
A quick few avoids. I would avoid myself, father figures.
Okay.
That is one I would have liked to have just seen on Netflix. I would avoid downsizing, which, sorry, Amazon, I watched on a Fire Stick illegally.
It got bad reviews for all its pedigree. It had top pedigree, but it got very bad reviews.
Was not good.
I mean, like I said, it had top pedigree from the guy. They brought you Election. They brought you the George Clooney movie that he was nominated for an Oscar for. Sideways. for those sort of films. Those people, you know, Matt Damon's in it, Kristen Wiig.
I'm looking at Matt Damon differently. I'm looking at Kristen Wiig, who I love differently. And I would, like I said, now, once again, if that comes out on Netflix, probably different. I would avoid, for all of my hardcore McGregor fans, who I'm a fan of his as well, and I'm hoping that Joe Rogan's listening to this podcast, because I listen to this all the time, and I've been telling about this, trying to get him to see it.
Oh, we'll shout him out on our Twitter feed.
I have to avoid that Notorious. I know it's the number one film in Ireland, and it set all these records, but that was, to me, such an inaccurate representation of what has happened. I would also avoid, and I think a lot of people are going to, you might get some pushback for this. Not a film, but a series that I was all in on and it lost me. Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, which is critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
I was all in. I watched like the first three episodes, but for me, have to avoid that one at all costs. And there's one more. Oh, well, I'll just quickly say I'm also extremely frustrated that I was not able to see Gotti, the distribution issue with that. I was very disappointed. And I'm also extremely disappointed that even though Den of Thieves, which I've been speaking about on this podcast for at least 6 months.
Yeah, the heat knockoff.
It's a nationwide release, and it's not in Reston. You know, I have to go to Tyson's, which for the Virginia viewers, that's not a fun drive at 7 p.m. You know, so those would be mine. And Anthony Joshua.
You won't get in anyway because all the fans of Geostorm were already in front of you.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Gerard Butler, fans of Geostorm.
I saw that as well. And we're going to let that one go as well. Love you guys. You take care. We're not going to touch Geostorm or downsizing. Must avoid.
All right. Yeah. So that's it for the month. Sorry to be so negative about this month, but we went inside a couple of different things. Okay, and I think maybe next month. We're going to come back and next month because the Oscars, we're going to have a discussion, I think, next month. Because to be fair, while Richard will go and see movies because that's what he does, this time of year is the movie business doesn't bother. They're just clearing out the inventory.
Yeah.
So there won't be too much to watch or talk about. So we are going to talk about the Oscars and we're going to think we're either going to have our alternative awards and we're also going to critique who they did give awards to.
So and Black Panther coming out 2 weeks. The highest selling pre-sale of a Marvel film ever.
That's what I hear. They say it could be the biggest of all time. And apparently, is there an Ant-Man sequel?
Yeah, I really quickly saw the trailer for that. And you know what? Because I underrated Paul Rudd, I'm going to go see this one.
He is underrated, isn't he?
Yeah.
And we will talk about that. We will talk about it nearer the time. Okay, this has been Richard's Movie Month. I'm Zeph. Till next time.
Absolutely.
This has been Movie Richard's Movie Month, a production of the Atlantic Voice Network. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice, via email at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com, and on the blog at AtlanticVoice.net. Movie Richard's Movie Month.